for violence and wrong entangle whoever does them, and generally return upon the one from whom they arose, nor is it easy for one who violates by his deeds the common compacts of peace to lead a calm and peaceful life. For even though he deceives the race of gods and men, still he ought to distrust that it will remain hidden forever. Since indeed many, often speaking in their sleep or raving in sickness, are said to have betrayed themselves and brought hidden wrongs and sins out into the open. Now what cause spread the divine power of gods through great nations, and filled cities with altars, and prompted the undertaking of solemn rites, which now flourish in great affairs and places, which is why, even now, a dread has been planted in mortals which raises new shrines of the gods over the whole world and compels them to throng there on festival days. It is not so difficult to render the reason for this in words. For indeed even then the mortal generations used to see in their waking mind the outstanding faces of gods, and even more, in their sleep, marvelous in the growth of their bodies. To these, then, they attributed feeling, because they seemed to move their limbs and to send forth proud words befitting their splendid appearance and their vast strength. And they granted them eternal life, because their appearance was always renewed and their form remained, and yet still, altogether, they thought that beings furnished with such great strength could not readily be overcome by any force. And they thought them to excel greatly too in fortune, because the fear of death would trouble none of them, and also because in their sleep they saw them do many marvelous things and take no toil from it themselves. Besides, they saw the courses of the sky turn in a fixed order, and the varied seasons of the years, nor could they discover by what causes this came about. Therefore they took refuge in handing all things over to the gods and making all things turn at their nod. And they placed the seats and temples of the gods in the sky, because night and moon are seen to roll through heaven, moon, day and night, and night's stern constellations, and the night-wandering torches of the sky and the flying flames, clouds, sun, rains, snow, winds, lightning bolts, hail, and the swift roarings and great mutterings of threats. O unhappy race of men, when they attributed such deeds to the gods and joined to them bitter wrath! What groans they then brought upon themselves, what wounds upon us, what tears for our descendants! Nor is it piety to be seen often veiled, turning toward a stone, and to approach every altar, nor to lie prostrate on the ground and spread out one's palms before the shrines of gods, nor to sprinkle altars with much blood of four-footed beasts, nor to link vow to vow, but rather to be able to view all things with a peaceful mind. For when we look up at the heavenly regions of the great world above, and the ether fixed with twinkling stars, and the paths of the sun and moon come into our mind, then, in hearts already weighed down by other ills, that care too begins to lift its awakened head, fearing that there may perhaps be some immense power of the gods over us, which turns the bright stars in their varied motion. For the lack of reasoning troubles the doubting mind, whether there ever was a birth origin of the world, and likewise whether there is an end, to what point the ramparts of the world can bear this labor of their unresting motion, or whether, granted eternal welfare by divine gift, they can, gliding on through the everlasting course of time, defy the mighty powers of immeasurable age. Besides, whose mind is not gripped by dread of the gods, whose limbs do not shrink in fear, when the scorched earth trembles beneath lightning's dreadful stroke, and mutterings run through the great sky? Do not peoples and nations tremble, and proud kings shrink, their limbs struck with fear of the gods, lest for some foully committed deed or arrogant word the grave time of reckoning for punishment has drawn near? When too the utmost force of a violent wind at sea sweeps a fleet's commander over the waters together with his strong legions and his elephants, does he not seek the peace of the gods with vows and beg, in prayer for calm winds and favoring breezes, fearful? In vain, since, caught still in the violent whirlwind, he is carried none the less to the shoals of death. So thoroughly does some hidden power grind down human affairs and seem to trample underfoot the splendid fasces and the cruel axes, making sport of them. Finally, when the whole earth rocks beneath men's feet and shaken cities fall, or totter uncertainly, what wonder is it if mortal generations despise themselves and leave to the powers of the gods great and marvelous force in affairs, believing them to govern all things? As for what remains, bronze and gold and iron were discovered. And at the same time the weight of silver and the might of lead, when fire had burned down vast forests with its heat upon great mountains, whether sent by lightning from the sky, or because men, waging woodland war among themselves, had brought fire upon their enemies for the sake of terror, or because, drawn on by the goodness of the soil, they wished to open up rich fields and turn the country into pasture, or to kill wild beasts and grow rich on the spoil. For hunting by pit and by fire arose before the fencing of a glade with nets and the rousing of it with hounds. Whatever it was, from whatever cause the flaming heat had, with dreadful roar, eaten the forests away from their very roots, and thoroughly scorched the earth with fire, there flowed, through boiling veins, into the hollow places of the earth a stream of silver and gold combining, and likewise of bronze and lead. And when men saw these, afterward, congealed and gleaming with bright color on the ground, they picked them up, captivated by their bright and smooth charm, and saw them shaped in a form similar to the hollows that each had left as its mold. Then it dawned on them that these, liquefied by heat, could run into any shape and form of things at will, and further that they could, by hammering, be drawn out into any point, however sharp and thin, at the edges of blades, so that they might fashion weapons for themselves and be able to cut forests and hew timber and plane smooth beams and bore and pierce and drill things through. And they set about doing this no less with silver and gold than with bronze at first, strong in violent force, in vain, since their overpowered strength gave way and they could not equally sustain the hard labor. For bronze was then of higher value, and gold lay useless, its edge blunted and dulled. Now bronze lies neglected, gold has risen to the highest honor. So the rolling course of time changes the value of things. What was once prized, in the end comes to be of no honor, while another thing succeeds and comes forth from contempt, and day by day is more sought after and flourishes, discovered, and held among mortals in wondrous honor. Now, Memmius, by what means the nature of iron was discovered is easy for you yourself to learn. The ancient weapons were hands, nails, and teeth, and stones, and likewise branches broken from the forests, and flame and fire, once these had first become known. Later the power of iron and of bronze was discovered. And the use of bronze was known before that of iron, since its nature is more workable and its supply greater. With bronze they worked the soil of the earth, and with bronze they stirred the waves of war and sowed vast wounds, and seized cattle and lands. For easily to them, armed, all things gave way, being bare and unarmed. Then little by little the iron sword advanced, and the form of the bronze sickle turned into disgrace, and with iron they began to cut into the soil of the earth, and the contests of uncertain war were made equal. And it was earlier that men mounted armed upon a horse's ribs, and guided it with reins, and worked it with the right hand, than that they dared war's dangers with a two-horse chariot. And the yoking of two horses came before the yoking of two pairs, and before men mounted, armed, scythe-bearing chariots. Then the Carthaginians taught towered Lucanian oxen, with their snake-like hands and hideous bodies, to endure the wounds of war and throw the great ranks of Mars into confusion. So one thing bore another from grim discord, a horror to the human peoples in arms, and day by day added to the terrors of war. They tried, too, to use bulls in the service of war, and attempted to send savage boars against the enemy. And some sent forth mighty lions in advance with armed trainers and savage handlers, who might be able to control and hold them with chains, in vain, since, heated with the carnage all mixed together, the beasts, savage, threw the ranks into confusion with no distinction, shaking their terrifying crests of their heads on every side, nor could the horsemen calm their horses' hearts, terrified by the roaring, and turn them with the reins upon the enemy. The lionesses, enraged, hurled their bodies in a leap in all directions, and bared their faces at those coming against them and tore down from behind men who never saw them coming, those they had seized, and threw them wounded to the ground, overpowered, fixed fast by strong bites and hooked claws. And the bulls tossed their own allies and trampled them underfoot and gored the flanks and bellies of the horses from beneath with their horns, and, threatening in mind, ripped up the ground. And the boars slashed their allies with strong tusks, savage, staining, broken, their own weapons with their blood, staining, broken, their own weapons with their blood in turn, and dealt mingled destruction of horsemen and footmen alike. For horses swerved sideways to escape the fierce thrust of teeth, or reared up, struck at the air with their feet, in vain, since, hamstrung, you would see them fall and cover the ground with a heavy collapse. If any they thought sufficiently tamed at home before, they saw them break out in the doing of the deed, with wounds, uproar, flight, terror, tumult, nor could they lead back any part of them. For every varied kind of beast scattered in flight, as now often Lucanian oxen, badly mangled by iron, scatter in flight, once they have dealt much havoc upon their own side. But they did not so much wish to do this in hope of victory, as to give their enemies cause to groan, though they themselves might perish, they who distrusted their numbers and lacked arms. If this indeed happened as they intended, but I am scarcely persuaded that they could not have foreseen and perceived beforehand in their mind how foul and common a disaster it would become. And you may more readily maintain this to have happened in every case among the various worlds created by various means than in any one fixed circle of lands whatsoever. Plated clothing came before woven covering. Woven cloth came after iron, since with iron the loom is made, nor by any other means can such delicate things be produced, heddles and spindle, shuttle and sounding reeds. And nature compelled men to work wool before the female sex did. For by far the male sex excels in skill and is much more expert in every craft, until stern farmers found fault with it, wishing to hand it over to be done by women's hands and themselves equally to endure the hard labor and in hard toil to harden their limbs and hands. But nature herself, the creator of things, was the very model and origin of sowing and grafting, since berries and falling acorns from trees gave forth, in season, swarms of seedlings beneath, which is why grafting shoots onto branches also became appealing, and plant new saplings in the earth throughout the fields. Then, they tried one kind of cultivation after another for the sweet little plot, and saw the wild fruits grow mild in the earth through coaxing and gentle tending. And day by day, they forced the forests more to retreat up the mountain and yield the lower ground to cultivation, so that they might have on hills and plains meadows, lakes, streams, crops, and thriving vineyards, and that a belt of gray-green olive might be able to run threading through, spread out over hills and valleys and plains. As now you see all things marked out with varied charm, which men adorn, interplanted with sweet fruit trees, and enclose all around, planted thick with fruitful orchards. But to imitate the liquid voices of birds with the mouth came long before men could, in tuneful song, celebrate smooth melodies and delight the ears. And the whistling of the zephyrs through the hollows of reeds first taught countrymen to blow into hollow hemlock stalks. Then little by little they learned the sweet lament which the pipe pours out, struck by the fingers of players, discovered through pathless groves and forests and glades, through the deserted haunts of shepherds and their divine leisure. Thus each single thing, little by little, time draws forth into the open, and reason brings up into the shores of light. These things soothed their spirits and delighted them when sated with food, for then all such things are welcome. So often, lying together on the soft grass beside a stream of water, beneath the branches of a tall tree, with no great wealth they kept their bodies pleasantly, especially when the weather smiled and the seasons of the year painted the greening grass with flowers. Then were jesting, then talk, then sweet laughter, used to arise, for then the rustic muse was in its prime. Then playful merriment moved them to wreathe head and shoulders with flowers and leaves, playfulness stirred them, and to advance their limbs out of rhythm, moving them clumsily, and to strike Mother Earth with a clumsy foot, from which arose laughter and sweet peals of merriment, because all these things, being new, were then the more marvelous and vigorous. And from this, for those who lay awake, there were comforts in drawing out voices in many modes and bending them into song and running with curved lip over the reed pipes, which is why, even now, people awake at night keep this practice going. And they learn to keep rhythm, yet in the meantime they gain no greater delight or fruit from it than the woodland race of earth-born men used to gain. For what is at hand, unless we have known before something sweeter, pleases most and seems to prevail, and a later thing found, generally better, often ruins and changes our feeling toward everything that came before. So hatred of the acorn began, so those beds strewn with grass and heaped with leaves were abandoned. Likewise the garment of animal hide, once scorned, fell out of use, which I imagine was discovered amid such envy that whoever first wore it met death by ambush. And yet, torn apart among the envious with much blood, it was destroyed and they could not turn it to use. Then therefore it was hides. Now it is gold and purple that vex the life of men with cares and wear it out with war. Wherefore, I think, the greater blame rests with us. For cold tormented the earth-born men, naked, without hides, but it harms us not at all to go without purple clothing fitted with great emblems and gold, provided only there be some plain garment to keep off the cold. Therefore the human race labors always in vain and to no purpose, and wastes its life in empty cares, doubtless because it has not learned what the limit of possession is, and how far true pleasure can grow at all. And this, little by little, has carried life out into the deep and stirred up from the depths the great tides of war. But the watchful sun and moon, circling round the great revolving temple of the world with their light, taught men thoroughly that the seasons of the years turn, and that the affair is carried on by a fixed method and a fixed order. Already they were passing their lives fenced by strong towers, and the land was divided and tilled in separate portions. Then the sea flourished with sail-winged ships. They already had allies and confederates by settled treaty, when poets began to hand down deeds done in verses, nor were letters discovered much before this. For this reason, our age cannot look back to see what was done earlier, except where reasoning points out the traces. Ships and the cultivation of fields, walls, laws, weapons, roads, clothing, and other things of this kind, the prizes and pleasures of life, all of them entirely, songs, paintings, and finely made, polished statues, practice, and together with it, the experience of the tireless mind taught men little by little, as they advanced step by step. So each single thing, little by little, time draws forth into the open, and reason raises it up into the shores of light. For they saw one thing grow clear from another in their minds, until by their arts they came to the very peak.